With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. On today's episode, I talked to John from Boy and Bear. And it's a wonderful chat. And props to John. He'd just landed and just got to his hotel in London from Australia. And he'd done one of them things where he kind of pushed his face right near the camera on Zoom and to show me just how bloodshot his eyes were. So bless him. He made a massive effort. And then obviously the minute I press record, I then start firing all these questions at him, regressing him back to his childhood and school and earliest memories. And he was absolutely delightful and chose some fantastic records. We have a really, really lovely chat. Before we get on with that chat, a few things. So let me tell you a bit of news I've found out today. It's the 10th of October today on the day of recording. So this will be coming out a little while after, obviously. Had a big chat with Hotel Chocolat, official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track Podcast 2022. Let me just say, official podcast sponsors of Off the Beaten Track Podcast 2023. They're really happy with what we've been doing, and they're now going to be sponsoring us next year, which is great because that really helps, you know, with the production costs and getting everything sorted to give you your two episodes every week. So, yeah, big shout-outs to Hotel Chocolat. We're going to be doing lots more with them. When we was chatting about what we can do, there's going to be some events. There's going to be some little radio shows. And for those that are patrons of this podcast, you know that you get certain radio shows anyway. But I think we're going to do something a little bit more special. So really looking forward to that. And yeah, there's lots of ideas being thrown around, which will enable two things: me to do more really interesting, fun stuff, and B, tell you about how nice their stuff is. Because I don't know if I have to, because you've all had chocolate from Hotel Chocolat, right? Whether you're vegan or not, you know, they cater for everything and it's top level stuff, you know. But you've probably heard me mention it before, but their alcohol range is off the chart. You know, whether it be their vodkas or their gins, I always like to get excited about the creamy cocktails. So imagine a nice creamy drink, mint chocolate. It's divisive, mint chocolate, I know, but if you like mint chocolate, oh my God, you will not find a better bit of booze than the Hotel Chocolat mint chocolate booze. Oh my God, it's ridiculous. They do a salted caramel, they do a chocolate, they do an espresso martini, and rumour has it there's something special coming Christmas time. I'll keep you updated on that. But yeah, we're going to be doing some competitions with them as well. And so yeah, I'm just really, really thrilled. I had Angus, the owner, on the podcast a couple of years ago and got on so well with him and you know, really got into his, you know, his passion for music. And you know, he was such an interesting dude, and we got chatting afterwards, and you know, he offered to help with the podcast. And so yeah, that conversation, you know, started a 2-year relationship that's now going into a 3-year relationship. So thank you so much, Hotel Chocolat, Angus, and all the team over there for agreeing to sponsor this podcast next year. So that means plenty more podcasts for you listeners. Big thanks to Scroobius Pip as well, obviously him that owns the Distraction Pieces Network, which this podcast is very proud to be part of. Did you catch the the podcast series I've done with Pip called Tell Me About It. Five episodes, mini series, long form interviews with Pip. Go check that out. It's a really lovely chat. We're going to be doing another series of that soon. And a biggest thanks always go to you, Smashers. Oh, do you know what? I want to tell you quickly. I know I talk about Patreon all the time, but we recorded the second Patreon chat last week. And we done. We got a load of people on. All the Patreons popped on Zoom. And it was so nice. We worked out how I could play music as well on the Zoom chat. We've recorded it, and it's available now on Patreon. I will put it out on here at some point. Everybody turned up and we done First Thing Remember Hearing Having an Emotional Impact on You, and everybody brought their songs along and we played them and everybody told their little stories, and we just, yeah, we all got to infuse about each other's records, and it was just lovely. If you like just kind of getting excited about music, and there's no snobbery involved. There was some cheesy tunes on there. There was some absolute insane level electronic hardcore. It was just a real mixed bag, totally non-judgmental. You've listened to this podcast before. You know I'm not judgy. You know, music's there to be enjoyed, whatever. And yeah, we had a lovely chat, and we're going to do them each month over on Patreon. So it costs you $1 a month, and that $1 a month, I know there's a cost of living crisis, and I know times are tough, but I think it works out about 20 pence a week. And for that, you get to watch all the episodes. I put all the videos up over on Patreon. So if you like watching your podcast, you can watch them all over there. I put up radio shows. I put up lots of playlists. I curate little playlists. And now, obviously, we do the live shows as well. And love to have you along. And I should point out, if you're shy, then that's fine. You don't have to have the camera on and you don't have to have your mic on. You can just lurk about, and not in a sinister way, and just watch it and enjoy it. And yeah, so that's over on patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. And if you do sign up as well, you get access to the huge back catalogue as well. There's hundreds and hundreds of radio shows and videos and God knows what. So you can just come feast on that if you feel like you need any more of my annoying Essex lisp in your ears. Anyway, let's get some good chat going. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Boy and Bear.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. John, how are you today?
I'm doing really well, Stu. Doing really well.
Good, good, good. I mean, that's a massive lie. I mean, we've just had a chat and you've just landed from a massive flight to the UK. Yeah.
But hey, it's a sunny day in London. And
that's rare.
Maybe a few and far between. So when you get them, you love it.
Wicked, wicked. Oh, well, it's good to have you in the UK. Before we do anything, let's start with track one, because that's what we always do. And I want to ask you, please, mate, how you went about these questions before we even get into track one, actually. Did you find any of them tougher than the others?
No, I didn't. I didn't really. I don't know if you have the same questions for every interview.
We do, but yeah.
Because it felt like the questions in a way had been written for me, because I guess it's sort of, it was one of those things where I didn't have any, there was no hesitation for me about what the answer was.
Excellent.
So it felt very natural. Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. Well, tell me, please, the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
So I've chosen Love Like a Sunset Part 1 by Phoenix, which I think is track 3 on their, I don't know what year it was, maybe 2009 album, Wolfgang Amadeus, the one that won all the awards and did all the things.
Yeah, what a record that is, man.
Amazing record. And if people haven't listened to it, you definitely should check the track. It's got like a marimba at the start, and it's got the granddaddy of all synthesizers mixed with a marimba. Like, how that works, I couldn't tell you, but there's, and I mean, like, for me, I always think of Phoenix as a vocal band. Like, they're singing in the music, I guess, to not sound ridiculous, but to pick track 3 of the record and with a idiosyncratic singer with great melodies and, you know, French people singing English, but to make track 3 without any vocals, Like, it's so bold as well. Yeah. Like, so, yeah, I love it.
When it comes to intros, when the band started, John, I'm sure that people would have got their music, your band, this is, and probably Phoenix as well, when they first, you know, you both started putting records out for the first time, the way people would get their music is way different to how they get their music now.
Yeah.
And I'm always fascinated to talk about this with songwriters, because my children are teenagers and I watch them with their thumbs, and they're very, very rapid thumbs on their screens, and their attention spans are very, very short. Yeah. And they're sort of sitting in the back of my car and something had come on and they're singing along and I'm like, how do you know this song? And they're like, oh, it's on TikTok. And I'm like, oh, okay, right. And so I just wonder, because and from speaking to other musicians as well, it feels that there's a lot of attention from, I guess, maybe more commercial pop acts to get on them Spotify playlists. That's the key now. You know, that's as important as radio. And so I just wonder, when it comes to writing songs and essentially intros, John, how much of these things like TikTok and attention spans and playlists, how much of that filters through into your creative process, if at all?
Yeah, I think, like, probably for us anyway, we try and not let any of that stuff come in maybe until right at the end. So by right at the end, I mean, we just try and make the song sound like we think the song should sound to us. And so that might be a long intro or a long outro or a meandering bit or, you know, an instrumental verse, or like I guess we try not to think about ahead of time whether that's going to fit onto any particular format.
Yeah.
We just do the creating bit and don't try not to be analytical in the creating bit. And then certainly, like, sometimes when you've got a song and we've got demos circulating, because we're a band that records demos like a lot of people do, and then you kind of live with those for a while, and then you eventually might re-record, or you might keep half the demo and record some new parts. There might be a discussion like, oh, it's a pretty long song, when it's a really long intro. Like one of our songs, for example, Southern Sun, which was on a record we did in 2014, maybe it came out in 2013, anyway, whatever. But that had quite a long intro that for a radio edit got made for that. And someone suggested to us, you should do this, otherwise, you know, radio won't play it, because radio was a thing at the time.
Yeah.
And so we're open to those things, I guess. Like, I want people to be able to hear the song as we intended it on an album. But at the same time, it doesn't, like, we're not too sort of proud to go, oh, if it still makes sense, like if you can still make the song make creative sense with an edit that somebody suggests because they really believe that's going to be able to help them to market the song better. And those ideas will often come in from label people or management people to go, and they'll probably have mocked it up themselves and said, we think this will really work. And if we can get on board, we're open to it, but we probably don't tend to get into those thoughts ourselves. In the creative process.
It feels like just kind of getting the balance right, doesn't it? You don't want to compromise it in any way, but, you know, the flip side of it is you want as many people to hear your music as possible. So it's just that getting that compromise right, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to take you back for track two, and I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
So the emotional impact song for me is Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, that'd do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Tell me about your early memories of that.
So when I hear that song, when I hear the opening, like, bars of the piano playing it, I, like, picture my parents' lounge room when I was growing up. And, like, when I think about it now, they had a terrible setup for a stereo. Like, the kind of the record player was in one corner, and then there was one speaker there, and then there was another speaker all the way in the other wall in the corner, because it was obviously just, you know, that sort of made sense with where the furniture was, but it made no sense to listen to a stereo that way.
Yeah.
But my younger brother and I, who were in the band together, we loved that record, and there was just something about that particular song. Like, I mean, I love the whole record, but that song I imagine afternoons with the sun coming through when you'd come home from school, and records weren't like, because I'm not old enough that records were the only thing then. Like when I was growing up, it was tapes and then it went to CDs. But mum and dad had this record cabinet with sliding doors on it, a wooden record cabinet, and it had a certain smell and there was a certain thing to it. And that was the one, like that was the record for my brother and I. Yeah. And for me, that was the song. Like there was something about, in that third verse when he sings about Ceylon Silver Girl and your time has come to shine, all your dreams are on the way. Like the images that conjures up in one's mind, I think Paul Simon is a genius. Yeah. There's no question. But the combination for me is there. Like I've listened to interviews with Paul Simon and he's an interesting guy.
Mm.
And he's very torn about that song because he feels like, you know, he never really got to own the song because it became really famous. It made Art Garfunkel sort of famous. But I feel like there's something in that tension of a song written by Paul Simon but sung in Art Garfunkel's voice in that spot in his range. And you sort of, it needs both of them for me for it to be what it is. And the piano playing in that is just like otherworldly. So, yeah, I love it.
It's well documented, isn't it, the sort of they weren't best friends, and I think most, whether it's Morrissey and Marr, you know, there's always going to be that friction, and you know, it brings out magic a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean? And I think that track itself, Art Garfunkel's vocals just soar. They go somewhere different on that, and it's like Paul Simon could not have smash that vocal like that, not in a million years. And he's a genius, make no mistake, but that song is a combination that just makes something truly, truly beautiful. You mentioned the record cabinet at home full of vinyl. Was home quite musical? Was there always records on at home?
So weirdly, no. So my parents, as much as they had music there, they didn't sort of put it on. Like mum played the piano. Like she played piano in church. I remember as a kid, she'd play piano or play the organ. And I always thought that sounded really cool. And so sometimes she would just sit and play it at home. And so we had some, you know, music lessons when we were young. But I don't, like a lot of people have those memories. I don't have memories of mum and dad putting music on apart from in the car.
Yeah.
Like it was almost like us, I guess, being little kids wandering around touching everything and being like, oh, there's a record cabinet. What's that? So, yeah, it was almost a discovery from us as opposed to hearing the music mum and dad were playing, because I feel like my dad's taste in music is terrible, apart from the fact that I guess he bought the records, but then kind of had moved on to, I remember when I was growing up, dad, I don't mean this, I think there's a cool place for Enya because there's like, it's actually aged well, Enya's music. But at the time, I was just like, what are you listening to, Dad? Because I guess we were in the 90s and it was the grunge era. But yeah, it was cool hearing, because that was so different to, I guess, what they had in the record cabinet was so different to what was on the radio at the time and what people at school were talking about. So I guess it was sort of, our own little journey.
Yeah. You mentioned school then. Let's move on to school for track three. And tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, John.
So for me, school is like there's a few bands, but Pearl Jam really stands out to me. And I feel like the first album I really got into myself, like I remember buying it, although it wasn't the first record I bought, was the album Vitalogy, which had a really cool, like it was almost like they were replicating a vinyl thing with a CD, with the way the cover was. And I loved this song Nothing Man on there. I mean, I love a lot of that album, but Nothing Man really stood out to me. I think I've always had a weakness for 6/8 songs. Yeah. Like not to be too technical about it, because I guess that's not very technical, but there's a certain feel to the way that a 6/8 beat moves versus like what we normally think of as a 4/4. And it's kind of sad. And it's a technique that works for a lot of people, but it's like a low song where he then sings an octave higher, and that does emotional things sort of thing. And I feel like they're a great band, Pearl Jam, where maybe I think like they had some really cracking albums, and then they kept going, and then Eddie Vedder went and did the solo thing. But I think there was magic in those first three records, and Vitalogy for me was like, if you think of it as a grunge band, like Nothing Man isn't a grunge song. It's sort of something else altogether. But I feel like it showed that there was real songs behind just the sounds.
It's really weird that you chose that as the first Pearl Jam record, because for you know, being of an age myself where I caught 10 when it come out, and then, you know, it, like anybody else that was into guitar music at that point, it just, you know, there was a lot happening in guitar music at that point, and it wasn't happening in the UK. We was all looking to Seattle for for answers, and 10 was absolutely incredible. And then Versus come out, which was more of the same, you know, and it was like, this is incredible. And then for me and so many of my friends, when Vitalogy dropped, it was like, huh? What's this track, Rats? What the fuck's this? This is not Jeremy. Kind of took it all and twisted it all. It's probably my favorite, that and Yield are my favorite records now. But it took me a while to adjust to Vitalogy because it was such a, I think they were just kicking against the press then, kicking against anybody, you know, sort of expecting them to deliver more of the same. I think they just made the record that they wanted to make. And yeah, Nothing Man and Better Man's on that as well, which is incredible.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yeah, I think you've hit on something there, because, like, I loved Versus and 10 as well. But if I think about the songs that my brother and I tried to play on guitar at home, they were, like, off Vitalogy.
Yeah.
So, it wasn't – yeah, there was something – yeah. That's a, I never kind of had put it together in my head, but of course, yeah, it makes sense. I like kind of hearing it back from you.
Yeah. It's, I saw them about 3 months ago. They played in Hyde Park in London, and whenever they're in the UK, I'll see them. I think as a band, I don't know if you ever watched the Cameron Crowe Pearl Jam 30 documentary.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, John, it's incredible. He's documented them right from back in, like, Green River and Mother Love Bone.
Oh, wow.
And he's just literally documents their whole career. And he's so, and you watch it, and one of the things you draw from it is, like, not many bands last that long as a unit, and they've got it worked out, and it's incredible. And you just get a peek into that kind of brotherhood, and it's done so well. It's one of my favourite ever music docs, and I've only recently just kind of got into have you heard the record that Eddie done with who's the Irish musician from used to be in the band The Frames, I can't think what his name is.
Glenn Hanson?
Yeah, that film score they done together, is it Into the Wild, I think, like.
Oh, I've definitely heard Into the Wild. I'm so sorry. I'm just going to have to tell someone that they need to come back at my hotel room.
No worries, mate. So for listeners, I'm not going to pause it. I'm just going to tell you, like, John has literally just landed from Australia into the UK. He must be a very tired man. But he's back. I thought he'd done a runner.
Yeah, he's back.
Tell me a little bit about school. Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. I guess, like, I don't think about it a lot now, but it was like, yeah, I certainly, like, I remember people saying school years will be the best years of your life. I completely disagree with that for me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't bad. It just was like, yeah, I went through school, but I don't sort of reflect on the school years too much now.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
No, like, I mean, I was always into music. I was always trying to be in bands or being in band, but I didn't really think of that as something I would do as a career, I guess, because I didn't know anyone who did it. So, like, you could look at, like, we talk about Pearl Jam, you could look at those sort of international stars, and that was a thing. But I never knew anyone who was a professional musician, let alone like playing in a band, who did that as a living. So it kind of seemed like a fantasy, sort of a faraway thing. So no, I didn't really know. I had hobbies that I was into. I liked sport as well. I liked sport and music, but then I was also interested in reading and I like literature as well. So, but I was definitely like, my missus is the opposite of me. She's one of those people who knew what she wanted to do from when she was 14 and got onto a path and kind of went towards it. Whereas yeah. I was a meanderer and just kind of got my way there eventually.
Yeah. Most musicians say that as well. Yeah. I was really interested in what you said there, because about not really sort of seeing that anybody from where you was from was making it in music. And
yeah.
you sort of look into, you know, the big American rock acts and things like that. What was happening around those sort of formative years for you when you was getting in bands and playing in bands, like in Australia? Like what sort of music was happening that was exciting you that might have said that, you know, well, if they've done it, possibly we could?
Yeah, I think, like, because of the way Sydney is as a city, so I grew up in Sydney. And I guess Sydney's a bit like London or Los Angeles. Like, it's a big sprawling city. And I was a long way out in the suburbs. So there wasn't like a gig scene there or anything. And so the kind of gigs that you could go to when you were in high school were really those sort of arena gigs, I guess, or stadium gigs. And so they were the kind of things, like, I remember going and seeing Pearl Jam was one of my first gigs, like when I was, I don't know, 15 or whatever. And it was you'd get on the phone to the ticket company. You had to wait on the phone for ages. You'd be calling back. It was engaged because, you know, tickets would be released in the morning like that. So I have those memories of those experiences of trying to go to those big shows. But I don't really, like, I was never part of a scene. If there was like a thing, it was just like other school bands that you would see play, sure, those type of things. But I guess there were definitely Australian bands doing cool things, but because of the nature, I guess, of the way, like, I heard about music was from my friends, or you would see it in magazines, it tended to be like and on the radio, it tended to be like bigger acts. So, and I was like, I was at school in the 90s. So it was very much kind of grunge era stuff.
Yeah.
Like Nirvana was massive. And I was into that, Pearl Jam. And then I'm sort of trying to think, that probably was like I definitely like more things than that. I had a friend who was kind of into the heavier sort of side of things, and we played in a band together. So he was into sort of Metallica and Megadeth. And I was like all the Fairweather Metallica fans, and I enjoyed Black Album. Like, I thought that was really cool, because I'm not saying they don't have songs on other records, but that record has songs.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I kind of got a bit on that edge of it, and then, but it was, you know, like Chili Peppers, loved the Red Hot Chili Peppers as well, and they were a band where you could really discover from album to album, like stylistically they went in some pretty cool directions as well, and my friend was a really good bass player, so he loved the Chili Peppers because of Fleet I was playing, so, but I mean, I'm naming like the biggest bands of the time, but I feel like that's kind of the level at which music kind of got to me when I was 14 or 15. So, yeah.
And I think it's really interesting that at that point in music, that the biggest bands in the world. I'm, you know, watching like MTV Awards, and whereas now it's all essentially commercial pop music or R&B acts. Like the biggest bands in the world were Pearl Jam, REM, you know, Chili Peppers, and like.
You know, Oasis came in. Yeah. And that, I mean, I'm sorry, like, what's the story of Morning Glory? Massive album. But every song on it's worth being on that album. Like, my first girlfriend loved that record. And so I listened to the whole thing, even though I knew the singles. We used to listen. And then you're like, I still know every song on that album. And it's sort of, it's a testament that the quality was there the whole way through on the songwriting as well.
John, I talk about this quite a lot because a lot of people mention Oasis on this podcast, mate. And you nailed it there, because that second record, Noel Gallagher had such confidence. I mean, he's a confident man anyway, you know, him and his brother are not missing out on confidence. Like, they got that in bucket loads. But when I look at the single, Some Might Say, and I bought the CD single of that, and the B-sides, the B-sides, right, are Acquiesce and Talk Tonight. He's that fucking confident. He's like, oh, I'll stick them on a B-side. How many bands would give their right arm to write Acquiesce? Yeah. And like, he's like, oh, we're throwing a B-side. Like, he must have just thought, I've got another 20 of these in my back pocket. Yeah. Like, and there's something about that point in Oasis's, you know, career that I think that was their peak. That was, I think, musically their peak. And yeah, that record just... It screams confidence, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I was always like, more on the Oasis thing of the Blur divide. As much as I dug Blur, and I love what Damon Albarn's done, like, you know, he's a fascinating guy. Mm. But there was just something with the Oasis thing. There was an attitude, and there was a, I don't know, maybe because I was from the suburbs and the working class kind of thing coming through, and that real, like, you know, that niggle. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely had it. They've still got a niggle. I literally saw a thing on social media of, I think Liam had just been awarded some godlike genius award from the NME, and he was like, oh, I knew I was godlike the minute I was born. And I just thought, it just doesn't ever come off the gas with the confidence. I love it.
Yeah.
Right. You mentioned record stores earlier, so I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song you remember buying from a record shop, please.
So I had to, this actually was the hardest question for me, because I'm not even convinced I've given the right answer, but I really tried to remember the first thing like I had in my mind to go and buy, because maybe I went with my parents beforehand and bought something without really knowing what I was buying. But I definitely bought Nirvana Nevermind, because of this, I like this girl at school, and the guy who she was dating at the time was really into Nirvana. And then his friend taught me how to play Come As You Are on guitar. Like, that was the first song I learned on guitar. So I went and bought the CD. And, of course, the infamous, famous cover, you know, it felt kind of naughty and weird, and you didn't quite understand, like, the reference or anything.
Yeah.
Of it. And there was just a whole thing with Nirvana. But I love that album. I mean, I probably love everything they ever put out. And I really loved the acoustic record they did, the Live in New York one as well. Oh, but Nevermind just had a certain thing to it. The tones, like, when I listen to it now, because every now and then I'll put it on again and you listen back and you're like, oh, wow, they really were going for a different thing sonically than maybe, like, because probably my sweet spot is more like sort of 70s sound. Like, I love the tones of the 70s. And I can probably take or leave the 80s. I mean, there's some great stuff in the 80s. Don't get me wrong. You talked about the Smiths before. But then, like, you listen to it now and you're like, oh, it's like they were really responding to a lot of things. But the viscerality of the music was so, as a teenage kind of person trying to understand whatever they were feeling and, you know, kind of going through those, I guess, changing phases.
Yeah.
There was something in Nirvana that just kind of got straight to the point.
100%. And I was lucky. I spoke to Butch Vig on this podcast about that record, and essentially, and the fact that Pearl Jam and Nirvana were constantly compared, and I understand that they were both rock bands from Seattle, but you know, Pearl Jam at that point were writing kind of trad 70s guitar rock, really, weren't they? And whereas, you know, for me, I still to this day think Nevermind is the greatest pop record ever made. There's every single song on there is just got so many hooks, and it's like you can play any one of them songs in a club, in a rock club, and people respond. Stay Away, Drain You. I mean, Drain You for an intro. That's one of the greatest intros ever. And like every single track on there, it's got a more polished production, hasn't it, than what Albini done and but I know that, I don't know how true it is, but Kurt apparently wasn't massively fond of what the production that Butch Vig done on that record, but I think it works. I think it's really got a kind of, it's gritty, but it's got a sheen to it. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, I feel like that was almost the thing. Like it was that garagey thing polished up in a way that really came out of the speakers at you. And the vocal production and those vocal takes are insane.
Yeah.
Like when you listen back to it, like you can say what you will, that guy, like, you know, in terms of like singers throughout history, when you kind of get that coming together of what he's singing about and how he's singing and how it's delivered, like you can do something different, but you can't do something better than that. Yeah. In my opinion, that's just like, it hits you. Like it's that thing, I guess, for me, we did have a category about, you know, the emotional thing about it, but I think every song I've chosen has something where there was an emotional response immediately that you might have tried to understand later. And we can sit here and talk about why do we think that is. But the fact is it just existed before the reasoning. So that was the cool thing about it.
Absolutely. Right, we're going clubbing. Track 5. Tell me the song that soundtracked your years clubbing, please, John.
So for me, it's One More Time, Daft Punk.
Okay.
Had no idea who Daft Punk was before the, you know, like I wasn't hip to it at all. As much as I think they're a band who's always, like, they've always, when you go back into the back catalog before, always really cool, interesting stuff. I love the whole French aesthetic. Like I picked Phoenix before, I guess. If I could have found a way to shoehorn Air into this list, I would have done that as well.
Nice.
But I just really remember that. I remember because I wasn't really a clubbing guy, but I had a friend who was, and I remember going out and I was like, what is this song? Like, and it just was so repetitive, but somehow it wasn't boring. Like that's a very hard thing to do to kind of, and they've done it for years, being able to kind of get to the essence of what the song is and be able to give you enough of it, but then enough subtle variation and changes and the grooves are always insane. From Phoenix too, but no, from Daft Punk,
absolutely. I'll tell you what, there was an Australian band that never really blew up over here, but I loved their first record, and it was, you mentioned Air, and I just got sent this track once. Like, so I've got a club and I'm a DJ, so I used to get sent all the promos, and this would have been like sort of mid to late 90s, and I got sent this song called Enter Space Capsule by this band called Girlin.
Oh yeah, Girlin, they're great.
Man, and I was like, this is amazing. And then I was like, I need to hear more from this band. It was like really spacey electronics. And then I heard this track called Death to the Apple Girls, which was like, sounded like fucking Pavement. I was like, this band's mental. It's like every single song's just like completely different. And they never really happened over here, and it's such a shame, like, because they made a big racket for like three lads.
Yeah, and the one of the guys from Girling has produced some really really cool stuff
since. Oh really?
Yeah, I'm gonna get names wrong, but I know he's done a bunch of stuff with Courtney Barnett. He's another Australian.
No way.
Yeah, but some really, really cool things. Like he just obviously they Girling had a thing, but like you say, they kind of came and went.
Yeah.
But he's still making cool records now. His name's Burke Reed, I think.
That's it.
He's worth checking out. Anything he's been involved in, there's usually something going to it.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's good to hear there's still exciting things happening, because that record was absolutely fantastic. Okay, well, I'm going to take you home. And for track six, tell me a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
So I've chosen... I had a brain fade for a second. I'm back with you. Ballpark Music, the band is, and the song's called Cherub.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
So Ballpark Music are a band. They've been around around the same time we have. They came about in the early 2010s. And I remember having them on a support tour, like maybe it was even 2011.
Yeah.
So back in the day. So we got to know them a little bit. And then you sort of see them around on the scene. But I haven't seen them, like I haven't caught up with them for years. But I always, they had some, they're kind of a classic, like in inverted commas, classic sort of five-piece setup, like some guitars and keyboards and things. But the songwriting is really idiosyncratic to me. And the production's always cool. And they do all this stuff themselves. So they're the kind of band, like they put out a lot of music, like maybe it's like on average kind of an album a year, which is pretty prolific. And they've just sort of done I guess some people have a really big album and then they sort of struggle to kind of keep with it after that. But these guys have just kept growing and growing and growing. And I feel like they just keep writing songs that are unconventional pop songs that immediately get into your head and just stay there, but they're not the kind of ones that get annoying after a while. And they put this song out a couple of years ago, and I just straight away, I think it's my favorite song of theirs. And it's definitely my favorite song, like Australian song in like kind of in my adulthood, I guess. Yeah. Like the stuff I love from being a kid, but this is something I think it's special.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to ask you to give us something else special now, because for the last track, I'm going to ask you for a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
Okay, so for that one, I've chosen, it's a band called Here We Go Magic, and the song is called, now I definitely have forgotten that now. Hang on, here we go. Okay, Alone But Moving. Record was a different ship is the record, but I forgot the song title, sorry. It's my jet lag addled brain, but yeah, Alone But Moving. It's an amazing album. The whole record's great. But that particular song, I guess I put this album on when people come over and you want to put something on cool that people don't really know what it is.
Yeah.
But you know they're going to enjoy it. And are you familiar with it?
I'm not, no.
You checked it out? Okay, so we came across them because we were in looking at people to try and work with. Of course, like the name that every band that has kind of ever listened to Radiohead wants to work with, Nigel Godrich. And he did this record with this band who we'd never heard of, and we were just listening through his back catalogue. And we were like, what is this thing that, like, never heard of it? And the album itself is, the whole thing is worth checking out, but it's really, I guess, I don't even know how to describe it. But to say, for me, there's always, like, I like pop music, and I guess I'm saying pop music in the sense of if you trace the thread of the Beatles through, as opposed to necessarily like commercially successful, because I don't think this was necessarily commercially successful, but it's that mix of acoustic and electronic elements together with great melodies. And just, I think it creates a world. I think for me, Here We Go Magic as a band, just have those kind of the palette that they go for and the colors that come about in the sounds. And there's a lot of space in the music as well. So I think it's highly, highly recommended for me.
Well, John, we make it easy for everybody to go and explore that, because we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all your choices on, and obviously,
awesome.
Your music as well. So let's talk about your music. What's happening?
So we've just finished a record, and we're actually in London, sort of about to do a tour, but we're going to go and listen to the last few mixes because we're getting it mixed by a guy who's based here in London. And so we've done this. Like, it was, I really hesitate to call it a COVID project because it wasn't that. But, yeah. You know, when the lockdown happened for us, which was kind of in early, mid 2020, we thought, okay, we can't play shows right now, so let's just keep writing. And some of that started out remote because we had to, you know, we were all in our houses. We couldn't get together. And then we just kind of built a body of material. And then when we had a few songs, we thought, let's just go and record these and see how they're sounding. And then we did three or four in the first session. And then we had to listen back and we're like, yeah, cool. You know, I think we're getting something, we're sort of getting a bit of a theme developing here. And we just kept writing and we kept doing some recording blocks when we could between, as some shows started to come back in Australia, we'd get into live, we'd sort of go back into the live side when there was some shows around, and then we'd go back into the studio and sort of go back and forth really over the past 2 years. And then probably like the first four or five songs we recorded didn't make it. And then we moved on and really kind of really got, like, the first session that we actually kept the songs from was in sort of late 2021. And so some of those songs were actually written early, but we'd experimented with some more recent things end of 2020 and kind of gone, no, not quite right. And so we were working in Sydney and we were producing ourselves. And so it took us a little bit to, I think, get our handle on that, because in the past we've tended to co-produce or have a producer with us, but we wanted to do this one ourselves. And we're really stoked with where it's going. We've just put a single out 2 weeks ago. Whatever that means now, putting a single out, I guess, you know, some radio people play it and it's available on Spotify.
Yeah.
Song called Just to Be Kind. And for us, I guess it's always chasing our interests at the time as far as the music we're making. So I think part of it was you adapt to, in a remote situation, you sort of go, oh, how do we get things to feel good when we can't all get together and play? So sometimes we were throwing some electronic loops into, you know, if someone would have a set of chords they wanted to play and send around, and you sort of want to, instead of playing along to a click, 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 you sort of put a bit of a loop in there or make a little drum machine groove. And then sometimes that actually becomes part of the song. And so for us, as much as we tend to play the instruments ourselves, we've actually got a bit of programming happening in this record, and it's been nice to explore a different side, because I think for us, the marriage between, and I think I mentioned it with some of the songs we talked about, when that marriage of the kind of organic acoustic instruments with the electronic elements, when you can get those things to coexist in a way that that really works with the story of the song and the melody, then I think it's a really, really exciting thing to listen to for us.
Wonderful. And John, if people want to keep up the speed with tour dates, releases, where's the best place to do that?
So you can either just go via Instagram with Boy and Bear, and then there's links via there, but there's also our website, boyandbear.com.
Wonderful. Well, if it's cool with you, we'll tag you in this on all the socials when this episode comes out. John, firstly, thanks for giving up your time when you literally must be hanging and just trying not to fall asleep. I really appreciate the fact you've just landed and I've then literally just made you rack your brain for answers and regressed you back to your childhood. So I really appreciate your time. It's been a real, real pleasure talking to you, mate.
Thanks, Stu. No, I really appreciate it, man. It was nice to chat, and it's, you know, you've kept me out of going to bed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Lovely. I'm going to press stop. Don't go anywhere. There you go. Boy and Bear, adorable. With John, what a top fella. Absolute top drawer. Just landed from Australia. Gets back to the hotel, and when we pressed up, he actually thanked me for keeping him going and not falling asleep at 3 p.m. I mean, if any of you have ever done that Australia flight, it's insane, the jet lag. It's just impossible to keep your eyes open, let alone be grilled by me about records and upbringing. So, yeah, absolute love and respect for him for coming on and just having a good old chat. Thank you, you bloody lovely lot, for listening. It's much appreciated. I mentioned at the beginning the Patreon stuff. Go over there, get stuck in and support the podcast for 20p a week. It's really easy. You just go to patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. And yeah, just click support and it just does it. And you can stop at any time. Like if you want to try it for a month and just go and feast on the back catalogue and then jog it on, whatever works for you. But then pennies go in the pot to help with the putting together of this podcast. And yeah, I think I'm done. I'm going to say I'm done because I'm going to go and have a cup of tea now. And then in 50 minutes, I'm back. I'm back in the Whiffin, the little garden shed studio type thing, recording with Everclear. I've got art from Everclear on. So I'm saying that now. What if you don't turn up? I'm going to really have embarrassed myself at the end of this episode. But that's the plan. Got loads more great episodes, by the way, coming your way. I've recorded some absolute crackers, and they'll all be coming soon. So subscribe if you don't already. And, yeah. Anyway, I'm back next time. See you soon. Bye-bye.